Brothers and sisters, and ladies and gentlemen, this account that we've just read here in Mark chapter 5 is certainly one of the most horrid stories, accounts, anywhere in the Bible. It's by far and away in a class of its own. And what I intend to do tonight is to show you how what is said conceals what is not said. And I'd like to show you that we can take the story on three levels, and we take it on three levels. First, we can take it as literally as it stands there. Secondly, we are going to look at it as how it applied to the children of Israel, the Jews, at the time. And thirdly, how it applies to ourselves. It's three levels in this one story. So let's begin by looking carefully at what is actually said and thinking about it and trying to get behind the words, or at least putting some flesh on the bones, if you understand what I mean. Because the Gospels, like most of the Bible, just give you the bones and leave you to fill in the blank spaces. So let's have a look at this, because it's a tremendously interesting account, and it is of the utmost significance to all of us. So Mark chapter 5 then, and verse 2. Mark chapter 5 and verse 2. And when he was come out of the boat or the ship, immediately there met him out of the tombs a man with an unclean spirit, who had his dwelling among the tombs, and no man could bind him, no, not with a chain. Now I'm going to ask you a few questions every now and then. If you feel like answering, please do. That means yes, and that means no. And so get your atlas vertebrae working properly and we will be all right. Question, first question for you. You've read this many times, sure you, especially you Crystal Dolphins. I'm sure you've read this many times. Let me ask you this question. How many unclean spirits were there?
Legion.
What? I've got a couple of answers here. One, legion. It might surprise you that there's just one. It says so in at least three places. Look, verse 2 again. They met him out of the tombs, a man with an unclean spirit. One. Go down a bit further in verse 8. When Jesus is talking to the man, he says, "For he said unto him, Come forth, thou unclean spirit." One. And verse 16, it says at the end of it, how it befell to him that was possessed with the devil, the demon. So there's only one, really. Although it looks as if there were 2,000 pigs there, that 2,000 of them came out of him. So that's a misconception which we have to put to one side. There's only one. But let's look at some more of the details. And by the way, the demon, the devil, is identified very clearly for us here, because it says, where are we? I'm sorry, I've lost it. It'll come back in a moment. There it is. It says there in verse 15, and they come to Jesus and see him that was possessed with the devil and had the legion, sitting and clothed and in his right mind. So having this one demon or devil or whatever we choose to call it means that he was out of his mind and he's back back to normality now. So let's set that clear. Let's have a look now at verse 2 again. He was come out of the boat immediately, says Mark, right away, straight away. They met him out of the tombs, a man with an unclean spirit. It sounds as if the man is sort of lurking there and suddenly sees Jesus coming out and he leaps out of there and runs down to the shore to meet him. Immediately they met him. There's a suddenness, there's an urgency, there's an immediacy of what's happened here. He comes charging down to meet up with Jesus. Okay? He's met him out of the tombs. Now, if you look in verse 3, it says that this man had his dwelling among the tombs. The Revised Version changes it. And it says he had his dwelling in the tombs. Now that takes a bit of getting your head round. It really does. If the tombs or caves in the hillside, which I think they must have been. There are caves in the hillsides. There are stones in front of them, which are rolled in front of them. And this man had his dwelling in the tombs, in those holes, in those graves. Now, you've got to be very far gone to be doing things like that, haven't you? You have got to be very, very far gone indeed to do something like that. He's dwelling, he's living in the tombs. Now, I suggest to you that if you were Rabbi Shemuel and you were looking for a place for your next Sabbath school outing, Sunday school outing, well, it won't be Sunday school, it will be Sabbath school outing. You're going to take the kids off for a trip someplace. You wouldn't think too hard about this particular place here. You wouldn't consider it too much. Billy Butlin wouldn't consider it too much for his holiday camps either. Because, just imagine this, huh? You're tiptoeing past this place in the middle of the night. You've got to go someplace. And you're going past this place, tiptoe. And then you hear a grinding of stone, a rumble of stone as he shoves the stone away from the mouth of the cave. And then you hear a clanking of chains. Because, you notice it says he had fetters and chains that he broke. So there were bits of chain hanging off him. A clanking of chains. And there you are going. And suddenly, out of nowhere, this man leaps out and yells, like sort of like this. And stands in front of you, and you have a good look at him. No, you see, that's with your telescope, of course, because you disappear over there surrounding him for a long. And you have a good look at him. Now, I'd like to ask you to look at this man with me in your minds and have compassion on him. It is a truly, truly horrid story. It really is. Let's start with the bit about the no man could bind him, end of verse 3. No, not with a chain. Because he had often been bound with fetters and chains, and the chains had been plucked asunder by him, and the fetters broken in pieces. When you read the other account in Matthew, you find that he wasn't wearing any clothes either. So here he is. He'd been bound with fetters and chains, which give you some idea of the absolutely enormous strength that this man had. But if he had that much enormous strength, how did they catch him to put these fetters and chains on him? Interesting question, isn't it? Now, I know you've all been staying awake at night, wondering how they used to catch gorillas in the days before they had tranquilizer darts. You have been, haven't you? How do you think they managed to catch gorillas before they had tranquilizer darts? I'll tell you one story that I've heard. I mean, I don't know if they believe it or not, but if you believe this, you'll probably believe anything. I don't know. They'd hang a bunch of ripe bananas inside a hollow tree that they'd found. And it had got just one hole there, just about big enough for his hand to go through. So along comes the gorilla, sniffing around, and he smells the bananas, locates it, and he sticks his hand through the hole and grabs the bunch of bananas. But of course, now he's done that. His wrists and his hands are far too big to get back out through the hole. But he's so stupid, he won't let go of the thing. So there he is hanging on to this, trying to get his arm out for this. So, and while he's doing that, they creep up behind him with a baseball bat or something like that and give him one across the head. That's the story I've heard, Brother President. And I say, if you believe that, you believe it. So how did they catch this guy? Well, I'm just imagining here, right? They know where he's running about, up and down the mountainside. They know where he's going. His footprints are right in there. They get somebody to go and hide on a ledge with a big stone in his hand.
I think. And as he comes past, he drops it on his head and hopes to heaven that he doesn't miss. Because if he does miss, and that man finds out that he's there, it could be very bad news. You understand what I mean? Because he catch caught and could tear him to pieces. So look at this guy. He's knocked on the head by all these stones that they bounced off it. But these fetters and these chains, they're important. So what's a fetter? We all know what a chain is. What's a fetter? It's the bracelet, you know, that they put on prisoners, around the wrists, and the chain go in between there, around the feet, the ankles, fetters here, and the chains in between. So, he has broken the chains, and he's torn off the fetters, I presume. Now, if he does that, what happens to his wrists and his ankles? Now, you don't need a medical degree to figure this one out, so Michael, please stay out of this discussion. So what's happened to his wrists and to his ankles? They're cut pretty badly. They've cut and bruised and all that. So he's cut, he's bruised, he's battered around the head from the stones that have landed on him. But not only that. We have verse 5. And always, night and day, in the tombs and in the mountains, he was crying out, shouting at the top of his voice, and cutting himself with stones. So not only is his head bruised, and his wrists bruised, and his ankles bruised, he's picked up stones and hammered on himself on the chest and on the arms, around the face, and banging his head against the rocks. And it's blood and gore everywhere. So you have a good hard look at this poor guy. He doesn't have on any clothes whatsoever. Shall I stop there, brother? He has no clothes on whatsoever. His body is cut. There's bruises and blood and gore and pus and all sorts of things everywhere on him. And now, if he's living inside the tombs, that means he's near to these dead bodies. Yes, for the present? Yep. You got that? Yes, yes. Yeah. He's living inside the tombs. And if you're living inside the tombs, then there are dead bodies in there, and guess what they're doing? They're word beginning with rot and ending in ing. They're rotting. And they're producing all of these hideous juices and stinking fluids. And they're getting into the wounds. And therefore this man must have had a terribly, tremendously advanced case of septicemia. He must have been near to death. He had nowhere to go. He was gone. He was blood and gore and everything else. And his head is shoveled. And his beard is full of spittle and foam and froth. And in it he's got ticks and maggots from in the wounds. And lice and fleas and anything else? I don't know. But he's a piteous sight. And what is more, he stinks to high heaven. How do we know that? Because he's living right next to these dead bodies. It's an awful picture. It's a dreadful, dreadful picture of a human being that we've got here. Question is, why? Why does the writer of the Gospel put such a horrid thing right in chapter 5 of his gospel? Why? He must have a reason. And I would suggest to you now that we've had a look at the literal aspect of it. Let's go now to the next level. I want to suggest to you that the writer has written this like he has done in order to convey to us that this is a picture of Israel in the sight of God. Horrid, stinking, wounded,
battered, cut, bruised. I'm sure why I say that. Stick your finger in Mark, because you're coming back there quite often. And let's go into Isaiah chapter 1. And read this description here. And you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. Isaiah chapter 1. The prophet is talking about his own people and their situation in the sight of God. And if doesn't remind you, if this doesn't remind you of religion, I don't know what will. Here we are, chapter 1 and verse 5. Why should ye, children of Israel, be stricken anymore? You will revolt more and more. The whole head is sick. He's been banging his head against the walls. The whole heart is faint. He's on the way out. From the sole of the foot, even to the head, there is no soundness in it, but wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. They have not been closed, neither bound up, neither mollified with ointment. It's describing Israel. But it is also, at the same time, you can see very clearly now, he's describing Legion. So Legion, I see, is a picture of Israel in the sight of God. And now when we go back to Mark chapter 5, we find that he compounds it. He says there in verse 6, when he saw Jesus afar off, he ran and worshipped him. He ran up to him and fell down on his face before him and cried out with a loud voice. And this is what he says. What have I to do with thee, Jesus, thou Son of the Most High God? Go away from me. What have I done? I've got nothing to do with you. Don't come here. Go, get lost. Go away. Clear off. That's what those words mean. That's what those words mean. I want nothing to do with you. And there you see Israel saying to Jesus, despite all the works that he did, we want nothing to do with you. Go away. Get lost. And now as you come with me to Isaiah chapter 65, hold Mark 5, we need that again. As you come with me to Isaiah chapter 65, you will see this, which is a truly extraordinary verse. It's extraordinary because of the connection that we can make with Legion. Chapter 65, verse 3. It's talking about Israel again. In verse 2 says, I have spread out my hands all the day unto rebellious people, which walketh in a way that is not good after their own thoughts. That's what this poor guy was doing. A people that provoketh me to anger continually to my face, that sacrificeth in gardens, that burneth incense upon altars of brick, which lodge, sit, or remain, live among the graves, and lodge in the secret places. That sounds awfully like Legion, doesn't it? And then we got this next bit. Which eat swine's flesh. Now, I ask you this question. Brother President, what do you suppose he ate? What do you suppose he ate?
Grubs,
worms. It says swine's flesh there. What was on that mountainside right near to him? A whole herd of swine. So when he felt the urge to have some dinner, what does he do? He rushes out there, grabs one of these poor brutes, and tears it to pieces. He's strong enough to do it. He tears it to pieces, and that's his dinner. Which eat swine's flesh. And then it adds an even more horrid description. It says, broth of abominable things is in their vessels. So what abominable things do you think he had to eat right there?
Human flesh in the graves.
Human flesh in the graves. It's terrible, isn't it? It really is terrible. And then we have this added on, which confirms the idea. He says, which say, stand by thyself, come not near me, for I am holier than thou. That's what he was telling Jesus. Don't come near to me. I want nothing to do with you. Go away. I'm better than you. That's what he was saying. That's what Israel was saying to the Son of God. Okay, let's go back to Mark. And here is a most extraordinary statement that you miss so easily. It says there, verse 7 again, the middle of the end of the verse, it says, I adjure thee by God that thou torment me not. Where have you seen those words before? I adjure thee. I adjure thee. It's an extraordinary expression, isn't it? You don't see it very often. Where else have you seen it? The high priest of Israel, when he was getting Jesus to answer the questions. I adjure thee by the Most High God that thou tell me whether thou be the Son of God or no. Now, what on earth is that form of words doing in this man's mouth? He's as mad as anything. And here he is speaking as if he was the high priest of Israel. I adjure thee. It's a picture of Israel rejecting Jesus and killing him eventually at his trial. But now it adds another little thing. For he said unto him, come out of the man, thou unclean spirit. And he asked him, what is thy name? And he answered, saying, my name is Legion, for we are many. Now there's only one other place in the whole of the Bible where those words occur. Only one other place. Let's go look for it. It's in the book of Ezekiel, chapter 33. Keep your finger in Mark 5, we need that again. Ezekiel chapter 33. And this time, it's verse 24. And see these living connections with the nation of Israel as it was at the time. See them clearly for yourself. Son of man, Ezekiel 33 verse 24. Son of man, they that inhabit those waste places of the land of Israel, like Gadara, saying, Abraham was one, and he inherited the land, but we are many. There it is. And the land is given to us for an inheritance. It's the Jewish claim to that land that this man is reiterating here. We are many, and the land is ours. And the next thing that happens in Mark chapter 5, in verse 10, is that they say, he besought him much that they would not send them away out of the land, out of the country. And here are these people seeing that by the rejection of Jesus, maybe symbolically speaking, that God was going to cast them out of their country and send them away and leave them out of Israel. And it goes on like this, you see. It says there was a herd of swine feeding there. And all the devils besought him, saying, send us into the swine that we may enter into them. And he gave them leave. He's acting out this parable. And he says, the unclean spirits came out and entered into the swine. And the herd ran violently down a steep place into the sea. And they were about 2,000. And they were choked in the sea. And it is a symbol. Here are these people. Jesus calls them swine. Cast not your pearls before swine, is what he said. Don't cast your pearls before swine. These people are like that. And when the Romans came, the whole herd, Israel as a nation, was destroyed and sent into the sea of nations. They were cast out, they were dispersed, they were all over the place. And this is a symbol of this happening. I'd like you to notice too, because I should mention this to you, is verse 5, where it says, always, night and day, in the tombs and in the mountains, he was crying out and cutting himself with stones. Can you remember in the Old Testament, Brother President, where people were cutting themselves?
Tell me.
All right, I give up. Where is in the Old Testament you read of people cutting themselves? Mount Carmel. The worshippers of Baal. They were worshipping Baal, a false god, on Mount Carmel. Here is this man cutting himself with stones. You notice, not one, plural. He could have said, cutting himself with stone. No, he doesn't say that. Cutting himself with stones, plural. So I ask you, what stone were the children of Israel cutting and injuring themselves with? Oh, no, I'm not going to ask you. Stone, cutting the children of Israel, hurting them, causing them pain.
No.
What stone were they cutting themselves with that was hurting them? The tablets of stone which had the law written upon it. They had made that their great idol and they were worshipping that and saying, that's all we need to save us. And it was written on tables of stone. Isn't that extraordinary? It's an amazing figure that these people were cutting themselves like that. It was hurting them. And they were telling the Son of God, push off. We don't want you. Go away. We are holier than you. Because that was the claim of the scribes and the Pharisees. We are holier than you. This man by Beelzebub casts out devils. That's what they were saying. It's a terrible, terrible picture of Israel. So that's the second level. Let's go to the proceed to the end of the story now, and you'll see how we bring it home to ourselves. This is how sin makes us appear in the sight of God. We are naked, no clothes, hair everywhere, skin filthy, dead while we lived. That man was dead while he lived. He's a walking corpse, really. He's dead while he lived. I remember Jesus saying, let the dead bury their dead. And this is a picture of Israel. It's a picture of humankind. In its sin, its corruption, its disease, its filth, and it's on its way out. Now look what happens. The story continues very, very touchingly. The swine have now drowned. And they that fed them fled and told it in the city and in the country. And they came to see what it was that was done. And they come to Jesus. All of them now, they've heard about this good news. They come to Jesus. And what do they find? They find him that was possessed with the devil and had the legion, sitting. He was no longer running up and down the mountainside yelling at the top of his voice. Clothed. Is that thing straight? Clothed. Sitting. And in his right mind. Is that thing straight on? Yeah. Sitting. Clothed. What a ridiculous And in his right mind. Now, I ask you a question. Where did he get the clothes from? Excuse me a minute. Where did he get the clothes from?
the dead body.
It's one possibility. But I don't think it's much of a possibility, really, do you? I mean, somebody you just cleaned, you just made better, you just healed all these wounds on him. You've just done all that for him. You're going to put the clothes from a dead body on him? Nah, no chance. Obviously, I don't think so. Burton's might have been able to help, but he doesn't know. So where do you get clothes from? Exactly. Jesus provided the clothing for him. I like that. Because it is a symbol of us, when we're healed, being clothed with the righteousness, the robe of righteousness from the Lord. But one little problem before that. The wounds and so on, the cuts and the bruises and so on, have been healed. But the ticks and the fleas and the maggots and the whatnot, they're still on his skin, I would think. Would you put a nice set of clothes on the body of a man with loads of ticks and fleas and maggots and things like that? I'd have a problem doing that. So what did they do with him? They washed him. Where? In the Sea of Galilee. And what is that a symbol of?
Baptism.
They baptized him in the Sea of Galilee. Isn't it extraordinary that all of these things are right here? Really is. So let's have a look at Ephesians chapter 2. We'll need Mark chapter 5 again in a few moments. But this is about our last excursion. Ephesians chapter 2. I read this thing, and I thought to myself, I wonder if Paul knew this man. I really do wonder. Because this description is so much like Legion, I wonder whether Paul met him. Don't know. But here we go. Ephesians chapter 2. And he's talking to all of us now. Notice how the emphasis here. And you hath he quickened, made alive, who were dead in trespasses and sins. You were once dead in trespasses and sins. We were once dead in trespasses and sins, wherein in time past ye walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that now worketh in the sons of disobedience. All that we had in our minds was doing wrong. Now you have in mind doing something right. Among whom also we all once lived, Legion, living amongst the dead in that graveyard, in the lusts of our flesh, doing the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature the children of wrath, even as others. Do you know how they must have hated Legion? Because if their children went walking past there, he might have leapt out and damaged them, injured them, killed them. And if the parents went walking past, he'd do the same thing. They hated him. We were by nature the children of wrath. And God was angry too. But God, who is rich in mercy, for his great love wherewith he loved us, even when we were dead in sins, hath quickened us and made us alive. That's the meaning of that. I'll ask you sisters this, because the brethren can stay out of this one. Tell me, look at this man again. For the last time. Cut, bruised, bleeding, suppurating, ticks and flies and fleas and maggots, and a cloud of insects around his head, spitting down his beard. All that stinking to high heaven of these corpses that he lived among. There he is, sisters. Could you fall in love with a man like that? Or would you have second thoughts? No, sorry, not friends. Could you? Would you?
That yes, that's no. I'm not a woman, but if I was, I'd have a hard time. I'd have a real hard time looking this guy a second time. But that's what he says. God, who is rich in mercy, for his great love wherewith he loved us, even when we were dead in trespasses and sins, hath made us alive together with Christ. Brackets, by grace have ye been saved. Let me underline that point too. This man had done nothing at all to save himself. The only thing in that whole account that entitled him at all in any way to being saved from the grave that he was definitely going to for real is the fact that he says to Jesus, "What have I to do with thee, thou Jesus, thou Son of the Most High God?" One thing, he recognized and acknowledged that Jesus is the Son of God. And that saved him. Hath quickened us together with Christ. By grace have ye been saved. And hath raised us up with him. And made us sit with him in the heavenly places in Christ. What was the man doing when they found him? He was sitting, clothed, and in his right mind. Just as we do when we're baptized into him, as that man was. But we have a little job to do, so can we go back finally now to Mark chapter 5. Verse 18. And when he was come into the boat, when he was entering into the boat, you get the picture of Jesus sort of stepping into the boat there. When he was entering into the boat, he that had been possessed with the devil prayed him, he begged him that he might be with him. He wanted to go with him. He wanted to travel with him. He wanted to go and work with him. And Jesus says no. I don't quite know why, but he says no. But then he says, verse 19, I do have a little job for you, Legion. He said unto him, go home to thy friends and tell them how great things the Lord hath done for thee and how he had mercy on thee. And that is our job. When we have been saved, when we have been healed, when we have been baptized, when we have been clothed with the righteous robes of Christ, we have to go and tell other people about it. And the man took it exceedingly seriously. And he departed and began to publish in Decapolis how great things Jesus had done for him. And all men did marvel. And you can understand why they marveled. Here was this great lunatic. Here was this great lunatic who had been running up and down the mountainside without any clothes on, shouting and yelling and screaming at the top of his voice, sick, diseased, dead, dying. And here he is now, perfectly back to normal. All men did marvel. And it's not surprising. And so, brothers and sisters, ladies and gentlemen, you've seen, I hope, that this is indeed one of the most horrid stories in the scriptures. But it has a happy ending. Just like our lives, we hope, will have a happy ending when Jesus comes back. Because when Jesus did come back to this place, he had got hundreds of people to come and see him. So, that's our job. So thank you very much for enduring to the end. And I hope you found it of some interest.